main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network. And this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker, right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station.
Well, I just can't get that guy to quit saying Insurgent Radio. I slap him up the head every once in a while, but he just won't forget Insurgent. He likes Insurgent. It's okay with me, too. It's sure a lot better than terrorism. Hey, you know something about terrorism? You're falling into a psychological and propaganda trap when you repeat the word terror and terrorism. These are system words. Yes, they love those words. And if they can get everybody saying terror and terrorism, you'll forget that much terrorism is simply guerrilla warfare or unconventional warfare. And many good people fight unconventional warfares and guerrilla wars. But if the system can get you thinking that even good people fighting for their privileges or whatever, then they got you where they want you. So don't repeat the word terror or terrorism. Because there is terror, so-called terrorism, but it's more important to identify military uprisings as unconventional warfare or guerrilla warfare. And then you can go on from there describing whether you like that type or not. Yeah, see, on these leaders over in the Middle East, they just say state terrorism and that's it. We're going to take them out. Or any group that rises up, it's terrorism, take them out, see? You're playing the system game when you use the word terror or terrorism. It's like the trap they get you into using hate crime, you know. Anybody with a brain knows there's no such thing as a love crime, so there doesn't need to be the label hate crime, because hate crime takes it political, and that's what the system wants. That if you're on the outs with the system, all of a sudden, anything you do is a hate crime. Yeah, see? Don't use the system's words. Don't use them. Well, I was looking out the window this morning in my little aviary out here on my patio with all the birds. I feed them and they come around, and it's interesting. We get plenty of sparrows, and then we get a beautiful little bird that's bluish on part of it and white on the belly with a long beak. A little bit like a woodpecker of some type. And I watched him. There's several of them around here, and they crawl up and down the trees upside down or sideways or straight. It's an interesting bird. I don't know. Maybe you guys have seen them around. But now I've got a big old woodpecker flies in here every morning, and man, these other birds scatter, man. He's the warrior bird. Get out of here. So I got the suet in one feeder and seed block and another feeder. He gets in there, he takes a big hunk out of that suet. It won't last long with him out there, but I like his style. He comes in there, get the hell out of my way, I'm taking over this feeder. He's a war bird. And it is Thor's Day, and I didn't play our Thor's music this morning. Sorry about that. It's the 8th of October, 2015. It's beautiful, beautiful weather here, and it's supposed to be good, beautiful weather all the way through the weekend. Now, what I should be doing is out there. I got a long fence, wood fence, on the front of the property, and it needs painting, and I've been putting it off and putting it off and putting it off, and I bought a sprayer, a small sprayer, and I decided not to use that. I knew I'd screw that up. So I need to roll it on there, and I've been putting it off, putting it off, putting it off, and I've been putting it off for about 3 or 4 years now. I've got to get out there and paint that damn fence. Anybody want to come over here and paint my fence for me? I'll pay you good. I'll pay you minimum wage. That's Indiana labor. I'd be glad to pay anybody $7 an hour to paint that fence. Yeah. I figure the only way I'll get that fence painted is if I take a belt-mounted flask out there with a little either whiskey or vodka or maybe beer. Yeah. Chug-a-lug a little on that, and then I'll be the happy painter. Maybe that's what I'll have to do. Do you ever take a look at these black basketball players up close? They're the ugliest goddamn bunch of whatever I ever seen. Yahoo just flashed a whole bunch of them on the screen over here on my other computer. And, God, I'd hate to be caught in a dark alley with those guys unless I had a flamethrower. I see a story here about a school, about a teacher that hypnotized several kids who died after being hypnotized by the principal. What the? WTF, what the hell? You know, who in the hell is going to be going into hypnotism in school or high school? That's me. So they had to settle for quite a bit of money about that. But hypnotism is not for amateurs. I studied it quite a while, and still I only scratched the surface. My first experience with hypnotism was when I was in my senior year. I already was studying it a little bit in high school. And she was supposed to be my future mother-in-law, but it didn't work out that way. But anyhow, I put her into a pre-hypnotic trance, and she went into a hypnotic trance, and I scared the shit out of me, and I quit that. And I never got back into hypnotism until, into the 70s a little bit, yeah. But it's not to play around with. You can seriously damage people with hypnotism. And when the system tells you that people who don't want to be hypnotized can't be hypnotized, that's a lie. The military programs, there's military books on hypnotism too, and they've used it to set up Manchurian candidates for a long time. Don't let them kid you. Here's the latest bunch of bullshit from that son of a bitch, John McCain, warmonger personified. Put his ass on the front of a tank, strap him on there, and go into battle and show how tough he is.
And we're joined now by the senator who chaired that hearing, Senator John McCain of Arizona. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be back with you.
Is the United States headed toward a permanent presence then in Afghanistan?
Oh, I think we are, just as we have a permanent presence in South Korea and in Japan and in Germany and other places where we've fought conflicts. It does not mean that we would continue to see casualties, but I am totally sure that if we pull everybody out to the degree as it's presently planned, we will see the Iraq movie again. And that is the place, I would remind you, where the 9/11 attacks were inaugurated.
What are the implications of that, Senator, though? Because as people will know, South Korea, Germany, those are places where there have been very tense moments, but not all that much conflict over the decades. You're in a situation where after 14 years in Afghanistan, you still have a lot of conflict.
Well, because of the American presence, they're able to defend themselves, but they have a robust American presence, training, and other programs. But the other option, as far as I'm concerned, if we go to what they call a embassy-centric force, which is the same as any other country, you will see the Taliban, and now ISIS is now coming in, and the Iranians are now providing arms to the Taliban. You will see chaos in Afghanistan. And frankly, I know of no military leader that doesn't believe that.
Does the recent fall of the Afghan city of Kunduz, after 14 years of U.S. involvement in the country, suggest that Afghan forces will never be able to secure the country on their own? Never.
No, but I objected to the degree of the drawdown, but it certainly shows that there is Taliban capability, and Kunduz is a classic example of that. So you have two choices. You either pull out the way the president wants to do, and we've seen that movie before, or you can have a certain level of involvement and engagement, which frankly does not include a lot of American casualties because of the roles that they would play, advise, train special forces, others, and have plans that will stabilize the situation.
Do you worry that the United States military just does not know how to stand up a capable Afghan army, given the political situation and the challenges they face there?
Well, I made reference to Iraq, and after the surge, we had the situation completely under control in Iraq, and all of us predicted that if we pulled everybody out, as the president did, that you would see the situation descend into chaos. I am still convinced and know that if we had left a sustaining force behind, as we could have, that the situation in Iraq would be dramatically different. And by the way, you would not have ISIS.
As you know, there have been allegations of a war crime against the United States because of what the U.S. has said was an accidental bombing of a hospital in the city of Kunduz, Afghanistan. I have a very specific question about that, Senator. The airplane that was used is called an AC-130, a very powerful gunship, fires an incredible volume of artillery shells on a specific spot. This is a gunship that's so powerful that it's been involved in killing civilians in the past, and human rights groups have said this just should not be used in an urban area. Speaking yourself as a military man, as a former pilot, was that the right weapon to choose in that situation?
The right weapon to choose is the weapon that most rapidly and effectively and efficiently kills the enemy. And I have seen, as you mentioned, these gunships in action. They have saved American lives by being able to suppress the enemy and enemy fire. This tragedy, and it's a terrible tragedy, would not have occurred if the Taliban had not attacked the place to start with. And so I find it ludicrous and insulting that people would say because of this terrible accident that somehow the war crimes are committed. To call that a war crime distorts the definition of a war crime.
When you referred, Senator, to the Taliban attacking the place, did you mean to suggest the Taliban were at or in the near vicinity of that hospital? Because Doctors Without Borders has denied that.
I'm saying that they were in the vicinity because they were in Kunduz.
In the city of, okay.
Yeah, but I think it's pretty obvious that fire was coming from the Taliban in the city. I am not saying that there was anything but a terrible tragedy, but to think that everything we do is with pinpoint accuracy lacks a fundamental understanding of what warfare is all about.
Arizona Senator John McCain, Chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee. Mr. Chairman, thanks very much.
Thank you.
What a son of a bitch that bastard is. And I've told you many times, his involvement in the Keating affair and the Contra affair and all that stuff, he should have been in federal prison long ago. Or better yet, tried in The Hague and taken out and hung until he was dead. This guy is a first-class warmonger. And I'd like for him to be on the ground when one of those gunships come in. I'd surely like that. And yet, I hear people up there in Iowa, Republicans, talking about how wonderful the Bushes were and how wonderful people like McCain is. I mean, these people, they're as guilty as he is, as far as I'm concerned, because there's plenty of information around. The information on what really went on. And did you hear him say that 9/11 came out of Iraq? Which is another goddamn lie. Boy, I'll tell you, I hate these bastards with a perfect hatred. As the Identity Christians would say, I hate them with a perfect hatred. And progressives hate them too. I mean, I know that Mike Malloy, he calls them sons of bitches and assholes and everything. Every time he does a show, which they deserve, you know. So you got progressives and lone wolves and so forth saying the same thing. I mean, what he's saying there is we need to put outposts all over the world. Well, they're already there, like the Romans were doing. And you know what happened to the Romans, don't you? And that's what's going to happen to us because they won't quit it. That power is not going to release it. They're going to continue putting troops all over the world and putting all kinds of crazy weapons all over the world until we're the most hated country on the face of the earth. And, of course, they save a hell of a lot of their hatred for our white race. Now, there's a lot of people in our white race that deserve hatred, that's for sure. And, unfortunately, most of them are in so-called leadership. That's like the office that Al Capone had up in Chicago, in Washington, D.C., and the Pentagon, the military-industrial complex, and so forth. Mother Nature, do something. And she will. Well, we got a missile here from one of our good buddies, Lone Wolves, back there in New Germany. Hi, T.T., thanks for the care package with some unequal stickers inside. The people of New Germany are becoming aware of the unequal symbol, and they love it. I keep telling other whites, hate the system first, then hate the niggers and the spicks. Any black or mud person who would listen to reason, I then instruct how to milk the system dry. I advise the mud people on all benefits that they can receive from the system, and then guide them through the steps to acquire such support. That's guerrilla warfare, man. Bleed the system. Educate the nigger, then turn him against the system. Niggers are an infant race and need guidance to do anything. What I saw this week in the heating assistance office, this being the open week of enrollment for working class blacks and about every third person being a mestizo invader, with a child who are there by the guidance of the local government welfare board. The welfare board helps the invading mestizos and ignores the black and white native-born applicants. Mailed-in applications are often ignored and discarded. So in the next few months, over 30,000 poor will apply for help in person in that small office. Whenever you are in a situation like that, always explain to the mud people who the enemy is. Rich white people are my enemy as they are the nigger's enemy. Try living on $9,000 a year for a decade or more and then tell me how much you like rich white people. The ruling class. Rich white people throw away more than $9,000 a year. New Germany's nickname should be changed from the garden state to the garbage picker state, for garbage pickings are the only new jobs created here. I welcome Russia getting involved in Syria. Uncle Sam is weak and old and has lost his cognitive ability, just like an older family member will sometimes do as they enter their 70s and 80s. They see what is happening but fail to react or make a counter move. Incidentally, my friends, Russia has accomplished more against ISIS in 1 week than Washington did in a year. Anyhow, back to the letter. I hope Russia pounds the shit out of Uncle Sam. Uncle Samuel, we're tired of living in a big prison camp. However, it seems to be better than living in a little prison. Prison is the system's attempt to breed homosexuals by depriving inmates' partners of the opposite sex. Yeah, that is really sick, the way they don't allow many conjugal visits, only to special people, that prisoners that kiss their ass. The very same cruel, sick movies and tactics the system makes, we can also make. Desensitize yourself to killing and stop thinking that killing and death are morally wrong. This must be done to understand what a white homeland is. Someone told me once that if the television broadcast all stopped for a week, it would be enough to get things going. I don't know. That reminds me of an old cartoon. I've mentioned it before. There used to be a cartoon called Ziggy. I don't know whether he's still around in the newspapers or not. I haven't seen him lately, but a guy with a tablet comes up to his front door and rings his doorbell, and Ziggy comes out and he says, "I don't have an opinion. My television is broke." And that's it for most of the white people in this country. Remember one thing, on opening day of hunting season in the state of Pennsylvania, there are 1 million white men in the woods with loaded rifles. It's a beautiful thing to think about. Hunters piss the system off to no end. I know you don't really care much for hunters anymore, T.T. Remember, they are young people, too, and they need our help and guidance. Well, I'm not totally against hunting. It's just I lost my personal taste for hunting. I don't tell other people not to hunt. But I think and if they use decent rules of hunting and not just kill to be killing, it should be like with deer here. We got a lot of deer now. They got a lottery going to pick guys to go out and thin out the deer herd. I can understand that as a conservation thing. I have no problem with that, even though I do have a soft spot in my heart for the deer. I don't know why I become such a softy. I'm not a softy when it comes to human beings, though, I'll tell you that. One more story this week. I was attacked by a female while I was inside a closed area of a home. Female threatened my life, came at me. Then when I attempted to drive away and leave the area, she jumped on the top of my car. I walked over and got close and asked her to get off the car. She turned toward me and, using the mechanical advantage of being higher off the ground than I was, jumped on me, slammed my body and head to the ground. My head bounced like a basketball. Afraid for my life and not wanting to hurt the female, I walked away from the scene as my car was being sat upon. Jesus. New Germany's getting very dangerous, man. I returned when the police called my phone and asked me to return. When I returned, they looked like they wanted to arrest me. The female told them that I had attacked her. Needless to say, it was a tense situation with the police, but I handled myself well, stayed calm, and spoke effectively for my defense. After 20 minutes of questioning, I was free to leave. I did not want the female to get in trouble, even though she threatened to kill me and kicked the shit out of me. You see, that's what love does. I love her, but cannot be around her. Point one, do not allow the people you love to hurt you. Point two, always expect the unexpected. End report. Thanks, TT, for listening. With admiration. Wow, man, what an exciting place New Jersey is. You could go out there and hunt and have wrestling matches with the women and all kinds of things, and encourage the black working and underclass to attack the system. Sounds like a good place for a lone wolf to operate. Well, a couple of smart-ass Mexican drug burros that were driving a car, and they replaced the airbags, or they filled the airbags with 55 pounds of cocaine bricks. They got in a wreck and had their brains splattered all over the highway. They get the Darwin Award for this week. Another problem I've got with the dingbat right wing is their love affair with the National Rifle Association, which I have never shared. In the beginning, I found out about National Rifle Association and its association with military weapons, and really more interested in the weapons manufacturers than they really are with the American homeowner. That's just a charade. That's a veil to cover up their activities. And we created a pro-gun, and when I say pro-gun, a pro-legally operated gun group in California way back in the 60s called the National Association to Keep and Bear Arms, NACBA. Now, there's you got to remember, using the Second Amendment too loosely is a mistake. Back in the old days in this country, 100 years ago, they didn't have so many lunatics running around as we do today, and they didn't have so many niggers on the prowl. And so things are a lot different today than they were back then. And if somebody in the community went crazy with guns back then, they would have grabbed him and just hung the bastard, and that would have been that, and most other people would not have gotten involved in it. Today, where you have lunatics by the millions, and every block probably in the country's got a lunatic living on it. You can't do it the way they used to do it. But the right wing and the left wing keep going at each other, both using exaggerated claims and so forth and so on. And, you know, they, of course, they hate Obama, and of course, they try to cover up their race, their racism with using other excuses. And I've never been happy with Obama up there either, but he's not all wrong on all issues. And I don't support a presidency at all. I think we should get rid of the presidency and operate with a troika like the Russians did for a while with three people. Or I don't give a shit about the federal system at all and let it go to hell and let it crumble. So, but in the meantime, I don't know which way we should go on this. I'm inclined to say let the guns go. Let people just shoot up whatever they want to and bring the system closer to a crack up. The only problem with that is you never know when it's going to be you or yours. I don't think there's a problem really with reasonable gun laws. And I've never been worried about reasonable gun laws. And if I'm going to go into a revolutionary phase, it won't make any difference either, because, you know, you can hide your guns and steal your guns and all that kind of stuff, or take them from the military or take them from the police. Like the Minutemen had their plans. They carried out some mock takeovers of police stations in L.A., to take over their armaments and guns and so forth. I mean, not it didn't actually physically happen, but they went through training programs on how to do it. But for normal operation, for hunting and for home defense, I think it's reasonable to have some control over that. That nobody's questioning anybody's right to have guns to defend their home and defend their neighbors and things like that. I think both sides are way off on this stuff. But the NRA, a lot of the left are right about the NRA. Their main business is business. And it's the cover up with the charade of protecting your right to keep and bear arms. There's so many guns in this country, they're not going to take all, they can't possibly take all the guns up, pick them up anyhow, no matter how many laws they've got. So, anyhow, don't get excited over this kind of stuff, and don't be radicalized to a crazy point by the NRA. Now we got all these groups running around like we did in the 80s with their camis and hide in the woods and all that kind of stuff, which is totally ridiculous. They have no chance whatsoever of doing whatever they think they want to do. I don't know what the hell they're up to. They're gonna, you know, if it was the one guy defending his home and property, fine. But who are these? Most of these guys are the same kind of guys I kicked out of the Klan, and why I left the Klan and pretty much in disgust, because you send people out to recruit and they come back, they recruited all the white niggers, to be perfectly honest. And these are the kind of guys that are oath keepers running around the woods and telling everybody they're going to take on the federal government. Well, that they got to be morons to think they're going to be able to do that, at least in the foreseeable future. Now, the ATF, when they raided my house, they laid all my guns, and there was only about half a dozen out on my bed in my bedroom. And I'm sure they looked those all over and got the numbers and everything else. So if I was into some kind of nefarious activity, I couldn't use those guns anyhow, so I think I'm going to sell most of them. I don't need a lot of guns. I only need a. I like my sawed-off double-barrel shotgun. Anybody tries to come into the house and with bad ideas in their head, they're going to go out without a head. I like that deer slug on one side too. That'll go right through the front of a car and take the radiator out and everything. So. And I like my old .45. I'm pretty good with that thing. pretty accurate. Of course, I haven't fired in so long. I haven't fired a gun in 20 years. Since I don't hunt, I mean, and I feel very safe with my pepper spray and a good knife. Now, I'm not saying that would work in every situation, but in most reasonable situations, those are your best things to carry around. Anytime you've got a gun, there's going to be major questions asked. And also, once you fire that gun, that bullet, you can't put it back in the barrel. It's gone. And in under the heat of the situation, a lot of guys will pull a gun and then shoot, and then their life is destroyed from there on out. Especially the younger guys, because they're more apt to do something active quicker. And so I'd recommend you younger guys not to carry a gun around. I recommend you carry a good fighting knife and pepper spray. And maybe a ball bat. I got a golf club sitting out by my gate. You'll never know how much damage you can do with a guy with a golf club, a steel golf club. Yeah, they're cheap at garage sales. Pick a couple up and get it out there, Metzger. Say it right. Okay, that's it for that thought. I'm going on to another thought. Duh. Oh, one other thought. The people who put this federal system together, they weren't darlings either. There were a lot of same kind of people we got in power today. But anyhow, we're a totally different people today than we were back in the 18th century. You know, every decade or so, a new set of people come along, and they think differently many times and so forth. So you can't run a 21st century country on 18th century rules. It just don't work. You have to make your ideas and all plans based on new information. And this is the 21st century, and we have to run things on the basis of a 21st century. So these guys that harken back to the founding fathers and all that stuff all the time, I think that's a big mistake. And in fact, I think the Republicans love it. And the militias love it. They try to make the Constitution a religious piece, a religious material. And nothing on paper is perfect. And sometimes you have to just tear it up and throw it away and start all over again. Oh yeah, the one reason that I keep weapons is simply to defend the home turf. And also, I keep them to try to defend myself against the government. We have a totally runaway criminal government, that's for sure, and I'm not about to run out and attack them. Not because I don't want to, but because it wouldn't work. But to have some weapons around that you can bury or whatever you want to do with them and put them someplace to where, as this system collapses, you'll have something to maybe stand off a few of these federales. Otherwise, I wouldn't need any guns. But remember one thing, most people have guns, never will use them. I go around to these auctions, and they auction off a lot of guns. And I see these big overgrown kids that are 50, 60 years old fawning over these guns and buying these guns. But I tell my gal, I said, you know, they're buying these guns, they're going to put them up on the wall or in a case, but they'll never use them because they don't have the balls to use them. Even in a situation where somebody's invading their house, most of them either wouldn't get to the gun, or it would be unloaded and they have to load it and it's too late, or they just purely... The average white man in this country is such a goddamn coward that he may have a lot of guns around, but he'll never use them. Unless, like in most cases, his wife gets out of line on Saturday night. You know, I just heard a situation where blacks are buying Michael Jordan tennis shoes for up to $300 a piece or a pair. I had the details of it, but I lost them. But the facts are that these guys that are getting all this money for these tennis shoes, they're only paying $5 a pair through the Chinese. And even though they've got fancy names on it. So Michael Jordan is making a fortune off young blacks. Economic terrorism. So the next time black complains to you about different things, say, if you were in Michael Jordan's shoes, you should be paying about $10 a piece for a pair of them, and not $100 or $200 or whatever it may be. You know, it's a typical example of blacks exploiting blacks. Well, did you hear the latest crazy-ass plan by the right wing, the so-called Patriots? They're going to go around to all over the country and picket the mosques, the Muslim mosques, which will do just the opposite of what they think it will do. And, of course, everybody's going to be calling them. It's going to be, oh, my God, the right wing can never do anything right. In fact, everything they do makes everything worse. Now, let's talk a little bit about Doctors Without Borders, who recently got bombed by our wonderful government over there in Afghanistan. I look at it this way. Why are we sending doctors all over the world to the black holes of the world, but yet we're recruiting doctors from India as fast as we can? They're coming in here from India, Pakistan, and all over the place with questionable training. However, I have had occurrences with a couple of them, and they seem to be pretty good. But the point is, why do we have U.S. doctors going to these places like Afghanistan and putting themselves in harm's way? I guess just to make the State Department uses that as propaganda. See how wonderful Americans are? We're blowing the shit out of your country. We've killed hundreds of thousands of people, but we're going to give you a few doctors in the hospital here to put Band-Aids on these people. I mean, to me, that's crazy. And if I was an Afghan, I'd think it was even crazier. You come over here, you blow the shit out of my country, you back up my enemies, and then you give us a few Band-Aids back. But if you go to many places in this country, they don't have doctors anymore. You can find all kinds of small towns all over the country. They have no doctors. You have to travel 50, 100 miles to a doctor. But yet, I know why a lot of this is done, is to put on the happy face. And the State Department loves it. Say, well, see how wonderful we are? See how wonderful we are? Yeah, so, and it's just like the churches who send all this money over to non-white countries. And when we need plenty of money for people right here in the United States, even non-whites in the United States, they spend tens of thousands, maybe millions of dollars sending it over to non-whites in other countries. So it's crazy. It's lunatic. But it's people making themselves feel good. Because when their church says, well, we're building a church in Mongolia, you know, we're giving some powdered milk to these little kids. And all the members say, aren't we wonderful, Jesus-loving people? It's all, as they say, it's all bullshit. Well, according to the latest study, which I'm not sure about, we've been Googleized. The fact that we're putting almost everything into an electronic device instead of into our brain and remembering it is leading more and more people in society who need to remember more, remembering it less, and replying on short-term memory in a machine, into an electronic phone or whatever. So I thought we were stupid enough, but now we're going to be stupider yet.
Mass murder up in Oregon. There was
some kind of a security guard or somebody there with evidently a concealed weapon, but he failed to confront the guy. This is my point. It doesn't make any difference how many guns you have. You have to have the will to use the gun when you have to. A lot of people are thinking about the consequences rather than what's happening right at the moment.
Well, on this latest ship disaster with 33 guys or 34 guys dead, and knowing the greed of the ship owners and irresponsibility of the captains of the ship that take their orders from the corporate heads, those men should have seen the danger coming and taken over the ship, even if they had to kill the captain, and got out of there. So they died so that the big ship owners and investors could make a lot of money, but they're losing a lot of money on that ship. The best way to get rid of this all this junk that comes down from the federal government is get rid of the interstate commerce clause that they put in there, because that's how they brought the South down in the 50s, and that's how they bring a lot of people down in this country. So as this government crumbles, get rid of the interstate commerce clause. Well, let's hear a little bit from the Russian side on this deal. We got a little deal here cooking. I'm going to play it for you.
I'm Peter Lavelle. The reaction from Washington on Russia's upgraded fight against terrorism in Syria gives new meaning to the term shock and awe. The administration's strategy is in a quandary. It shows itself uninterested in ending the Syrian civil war. Instead, it still wants Assad gone. In Syria, I'm joined by my guest, Omar Wakoff in London. He is a Syrian political activist. Also in London, we have Sharif Nashashibi. He is an award-winning journalist and commentator on Arab affairs. And in Chicago, we cross to Stephen Lenman. He is a writer, author of four books, and media host for the Progressive Radio NewsHour. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I very much encourage it. Omar, if I can go to you first in London, reading the Western media and watching American television specifically, somehow I get the impression attacking and destroying al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups in Syria is a bad idea. How did we get to this point?
Well, I think they ran out of real moderates on the ground, so they need to back someone, and they chose certain militants with strong Islamic extremist affiliations, including Jabhat al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda-affiliated one. They've rebranded them into something called the Conquest Army, and now they're suddenly moderates. And you can't bomb that as long as they're branded moderates. So I think the main issue is that the moderate groups, whenever they were swallowed by more extremist groups, and suddenly they need to find someone to cooperate with against the Syrian government.
Okay, Sharif, how do you react to that? Because these all of a sudden, and this has morphed over the last 10 days or so, this CIA backed quote-unquote rebels in Syria. I mean, it was a secret program a few weeks ago. Now they're saying these are our guys here. How are they our guys, and are they moderates? Go ahead.
Well, the CIA-backed program, I mean, which was pretty farcical from the beginning, almost before it began, really, it was attacked by al-Nusra Front to the point where it was almost decimated, and at one point there were only four or five fighters apparently in Syria from this program.
That was the Pentagon's program, not the CIA's program. They're two different programs, correct?
Well, I mean, what's your point exactly? I didn't really understand.
Well, what I'm saying is that if they're CIA-backed, I mean, does that make them somehow good terrorists? I mean, this is what Russia is being accused of hitting American-backed assets. These are terrorist groups, aren't they? Go ahead.
Well, look, put it this way. If the U.S. Launched airstrikes against regime targets, Russia would be up in arms. So you can't really expect Russia to hit the CIA-backed rebels and for Washington to say nothing about it. It's doing nothing about it, but you don't expect them to not
Sharif, I mean, Russia's been invited by the Syrian government to conduct operations within the sovereign borders of that country. So, irrespective of what Washington likes or dislikes, what Russia's doing, it is working under international law, unlike the American coalition.
true?
No. Sorry. Hold on. I have to cut in there.
Go ahead.
The Russian foreign minister was very clear last year when the U.S.-led airstrikes began that without a U.N. mandate, it would be, quote, an act of aggression and a gross violation of international law. These Russian airstrikes also do not have a U.N. mandate. That came from the Russian foreign minister himself last year.
Well, you'll have to source this one. We don't have time right now, but Russia got the permission, was invited.
No, I'm sorry. It's very obvious that the Damascus government has invited Russia's help,
and this is what Russia's doing. Let me go to Stephen here. Steve,
so what, just let, because let, the government invites you can,
you
someone
can read,
to intervene, then
okay,
that makes it okay.
No, Russia is doing it legally. The Americans are doing it illegally, and maybe you can address what 20,000 bombs they've achieved over the last year.
Let's have fair time.
Come on. Let me at least get Stephen into the program.
Sorry, why are you shouting? Don't filibuster.
Stephen, I'd like to go to you in Chicago. Would you like to react to what we've heard so far on the program? Go ahead.
Oh, indeed, Peter. I certainly have a different point of view than your other two guests. And I would say that what's going on in Syria is Obama's war. But Obama didn't originate the idea. The idea originated back around 1991 or so by Paul Wolfowitz in the Bush 1 administration. And when retired General Wesley Clark went back to the Pentagon right after 9/11, he was told by commanders there that Washington planned to take out around half a dozen Middle East countries, replace their leaders with pro-Western puppets, and of course Syria was one of the countries chosen. We know Iraq, we know what's going on in Yemen, we know what happened in Libya, and Iran is on the list. This is the dirty scheme that's going on. Moderates fighting in Syria, there are no moderates in Syria. There are ISIS, there are other Takfiri terrorists. These are the people supported either by the Pentagon or the CIA, or you name it, supported by America. And the whole story that you hear on mainstream media in America and in Britain, in France, Germany, whatever, is a bald-faced lie.
Okay, Amara, we can talk about, the legality, illegality, who has the right, who doesn't have a right. Why doesn't Washington want to cooperate, work with Russia, an invited guest into Syria, to work together to take care of what we are told in the West is the scourge on the planet of the Earth, ISIS? Why doesn't Washington want to cooperate? Because they've made it very clear over the last 24 hours, 36 hours, that they will obstruct Russia's efforts. Obstruct, not help. Go ahead.
At this moment in time, and until, well, let's say foreseeable future, what the United States really wants is to contain ISIS and prevent it from going into the likes of Jordan and Saudi Arabia, but directed against the Syrian army. I can give you all sorts of examples. Palmyra was besieged by ISIL for like 2 weeks without any plane of the coalition, American-led coalition, showing up. In Deir ez-Zor, the Syrian army has been besieged by ISIS for more than a year, more than the entire coalition operation, and no plane showed up to bomb their targets. And at the end of the day, what they want to do is to use ISIS against the Syrian army. They are happy for them to expand at the cost of the Syrian government. Now, the real question, going back slightly to the legality issue, is that as long as Jabhatul Nusra is designated by Washington as a terrorist organization, how come they get to get sophisticated weaponry from Washington, like the TOW missiles, anti-tank missiles? Is it really so hard to understand that Washington wants anybody to fight the Syrian government rather than try to contain a terrorist organization? So at the end of the day, all they want to do is to get rid of the current Syrian government and force them to accept a certain route towards transitional, whatever they think
about the transition part a little bit later. Sharif, would you like to react to what Amar just said?
Well, I mean, to what point of what he said? He made a few points there.
Okay, Washington is supporting certain groups in Syria that are designated as terrorist groups, and they're getting sophisticated weaponry. How do you react to that?
Well, I think the situation is very complex. There's lots of claims and counterclaims about who exactly is supporting what. I think I'd like to raise the point that was mentioned earlier by Stephen, I think, was that the issue of regime change in the region. Every regional power and every country, foreign country, that is involved in the region has been quite hypocritical about the principle of regime change. When it suits them, they are very supportive of regime change, and when it doesn't, they don't. For example, the U.S. has obviously been very hypocritical about that. But if you look at Hezbollah in Iran, which have been allies of the Assad regime from the beginning, when the Tunisian dictator fell, when the Egyptian dictator fell, they were very congratulatory about that. That regime change was fine. The moment it came to Gaddafi and Assad, who are opponents principally of the U.S., then it wasn't fine. So no country here has taken a principle for or against regime change. They simply say, well, if it suits us, we'll be for it, and if it doesn't suit us, we'll be against it.
Okay, Stephen, I listened to Barack Obama's speech at the United Nations, and I heard Vladimir Putin's. I mean, he condemned all the regime changes. I disagree with Sharif there. Go ahead.
Well, I certainly agree with Vladimir Putin, and I take great issue with Obama and the things that he says and the policies that he's pursuing. A key point, and I've said this in many of the articles that I've written, Daesh, or Islamic State, or ISIS, give them any name you want, and the other terrorist groups, Al-Qaeda, these are U.S. creations. They're used as proxy foot soldiers to fight America's wars. In Syria, in Libya before that, it's going on in Iraq right now, and of course Russia is very alarmed about the prospect of Russian citizens joining these forces and then coming back to Russia to create terrorism internally inside Russia. And I think probably this was Putin's main motivating factor to want to get involved in this. And just imagine what's going on, Peter. In a few days, Russian airstrikes have accomplished far more than American airstrikes have in over a year. Now, what does that tell you? It tells me that American airstrikes are targeting Syrian targets, not ISIS.
Okay, Amar, how do you react to that? Because, I mean, 20,000 sorties over the course of a year, and what result has been achieved? You know, as a matter of fact, most people would say that ISIL, whatever name we're going to use on this program, has actually expanded its influence and range during that time.
I mean, I wouldn't dispute much that the American-led coalition did make sort of denial sorties. So they do bomb ISIS a little bit. But at the end of the day, what the Russians have brought here is combat capability. So at the end of the day, they want to defeat ISIS, not to contain ISIS. These are totally different strategic objectives. And that's why we see that the Americans are bombing, say, this sort of place, that sort of place. We need to understand that they're doing something in Iraq as well. But as I told you, you know, in Deir ez-Zor, which is a fight that has been going on a daily basis between the Syrian army and ISIS, nobody is interfering there. Nobody is bombing their places. They clearly want them to overrun the Syrian army whenever they can, just like what happened in Palmyra. But whenever it comes to them, having some sort of a success going southwards toward Jordan or probably towards other areas in the north, Kurdish areas or Turkish areas, then that's what the United States gets agitated about and they start bombing. The problem we have is that this is an ideology. This is not a group of militants. This is an ideology. And once they sniff success, they translate that into their own DNA.
Amar, on that point there, we're going to go to a short break. And after the short break, we'll continue our discussion on Sirius. Stay with RT. All things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Russia's efforts in fighting terrorism in Syria. Okay, Sharif, do you think it's instructive to continue to demand the forcible removal of Assad from Damascus from power? I mean, haven't we really gone beyond that point? And shouldn't we look for a real transition where all parties have a say instead of making a demand like the U.S. has done for years? And you know what? When you don't get success, why does the U.S. continue to double down on a failed strategy? Please go ahead.
I think the transition period has to conclude with free and fair elections, and I can't see Syrians accepting anyone leading their country who has blood on their hands, from whatever side that may be. And the fact of the matter is Assad has by far the most blood on his hands. I need to take issue as well. I mean, we're talking here about Russian airstrikes against ISIS. Most of the airstrikes have been targeted against other rebels, not against ISIS. So I don't. The description of this as an anti-ISIS campaign.
No,
if you're targeting mainly rebels who are fighting ISIS.
No, Sharif,
that's not a really accurate description.
There's a difference. No, I disagree with you. They're different. They're bombing terrorists.
Well, of course you do.
You can have good terrorists and bad terrorists and yellow terrorists and black terrorists. I mean, that's how Western media covers it. Okay,
destroying terrorist groups is the goal.
Okay,
the Russian foreign minister himself.
Go ahead, jump in.
Okay, look, if you want to have a monologue, that's up to you. But the Russian foreign minister himself last week said, for example, that he didn't consider the Free Syrian Army a terrorist group, but yet they have been hit by Russian airstrikes. So it's not really about whether they're hitting terrorists or not terrorists. They're hitting anybody who is an opponent of the Assad regime. So this is not about terrorism, and it's not really about ISIS. It's about bolstering the regime, come what may.
Well, it's a legal regime in Damascus recognized all around the world. Stephen, you want to jump in?
No, it's not. A government requesting intervention doesn't make it legitimate. In that case, then we can say, well, Israel receiving all sorts of U.S. military aid to kill Palestinians is legitimate because it's a government requesting that assistance.
You're not going to get an argument out of me, but the U.S. breaks its own laws by giving arms to Israel when it was attacking Gaza.
Yeah,
Governments have a responsibility to their people. But Israel's existential existence isn't at stake. That's the difference, Sharif.
This is a government that has committed war crimes and crimes against humanity.
I don't like the Saudi Arabian government, okay? But I don't think it should be forcefully overrun, okay? Go ahead, Stephen. Jump in.
You are talking about a government that has committed war crimes and crimes against humanity.
And the United States bombed a hospital in Afghanistan. Will that ever be called a war crime? Because that's exactly what it is.
Of course
it
is.
The United States
is
never going to be held account. Okay. All right, Stephen, jump in.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
It is a war crime.
Go ahead, Stephen.
I might remind you.
Please, I'd like to give equal time to all guests on this program. Please, Stephen, jump in.
I want to comment about what Sergei Lavrov really said, and he said this within the last day or two or so. He asked, what is the Free Syrian Army? And he called it a phantom group, whatever it is. And he asked John Kerry, please give me some information about this group. Tell me what it is. Tell me where it is. Tell me what it's doing. It doesn't exist. It's a non-existent group with a name and no forces. The forces fighting the Assad government are terrorists and all terrorists. And Sergei Lavrov also said, if it walks and talks and squawks like a terrorist, it's a terrorist. And that's what the forces are in Syria fighting the Assad government. But the idea is an American idea. It's an American war, and no country can interfere with another government, especially to enforce regime change. It's a blatant violation of international law, and this is what America does over and over and over again. And Peter, you nailed it.
Well,
I hate the Saudi Arabian government.
Okay, for example,
I absolutely reject anybody going in and overthrowing it.
In Ukraine or not? Because they didn't, as far as I know.
Okay, Sharif, you were talking about Russian intervention in Ukraine. Let Sharif speak. Okay, good. Everyone has fair speaking rights on this program.
We're talking about governments.
Go ahead. Jump in.
Did the Ukrainian government request Russian intervention? They didn't.
So when was the invasion, Sharif? Can you name the date for me, or the week, or the month? Go ahead.
Russia has not involved itself in Ukraine?
Well, when do you think it happened? Because there was no invasion. The problem with people like you that don't know anything about Ukraine, don't understand that there are millions of Russian-speaking, ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine. You don't have to ask for help. Okay, when someone's bombing your house,
Russian forces in East Ukraine and Crimea were invited by the Ukrainian government, were they?
Okay, then again, you show your ignorance here. In 1991, the government of Ukraine. You're speaking out of school right now.
Sharif, listen, you're very rude and talking over me.
I'm going to fact check you every step of the way, right? And Ukraine didn't have to invite anyone in. There were 25,000 troops legally in Ukraine under treaty between Kiev and Moscow. Did you know that? I don't think so. Okay, Amir, let's go back.
Right. Okay. Okay. So yes. There will always be a caveat to your argument.
I didn't come on this program to argue with you, Sharif. I'm going to talk to all of my guests. Amir, if I can go back to you,
thanks.
London, How do we move forward here? Because the Russians have made it very clear that they're going to continue their policy, but we're told also that the Americans are going to try to hem them in. We even have Brzezinski saying that they should be able to obstruct any kind of Russian behavior in Syria against the wishes of the legitimate government in Damascus. Are you worried we're going in a very dangerous direction?
I don't think so. I think the Russian, Syrian, Iranian, Iraqi move has been carefully calculated. I, first of all, would like to comment on the previous discussion and say that people should reflect that the same party that is arming the Israelis to kill Palestinians is the one that is arming the Free Syrian Army, the moderate groups. Actually, it's, you know, you have to reflect on that somehow. But anyway, moving forward, I think the cracks have started to show in the Western Hemisphere, in a sense that Europe has been feeling the knock-on effects, hot knock-on effects of the Syrian crisis and the issue of refugees. And they're really suffering, in a sense, to that extent, and they want a way out. Now, we've heard quite a few European countries say we need to talk with the Syrian government, we need to talk with Assad, and I think that plays into...
Well, I'm going to get out of here right now and get ready to close.
They don't go back far enough when they're talking about this regime change stuff. This is the same meddling stuff that went on in World War I. Now, you know as well as I do, World War I was a stupid war that killed millions of people and led us into World War II. But in World War I, they were fighting over territory in the Middle East, and the Caliphate had been there for, 1,000 years, controlling that area, and the Western powers wanted to get some of these people on their side in fighting World War I. They split up all this territory and called it by whatever name they decided to call it, which was nothing but colonialism. So technically, ISIL is trying to reestablish the caliphate, which no matter what you think of ISIS, no matter what tactics they use, technically they've got an axe to grind, because before the First World War, there was a pretty peaceful area there, the whole Middle East, under the Caliphate. But now it's in total turmoil because it's manipulated by the Western corporations through the Pentagon and England and France and so forth. And so it's a mess. And so anyhow, that's the thing. Now, so you have to go quite a ways back to figure out what caused all this bullshit. And of course, add the oil in, and there you go. That exacerbates the situation. It always boils down to certain powerful interests wanting to move into an area which is not their area and control it, and then they call it terrorism when the people fight back. It's unconventional warfare, it's guerrilla warfare, and so forget that terrorism crap. But the indigenous Arabs and the people living in the Middle East have a real axe to grind there, because they got robbed during and after the First World War. So when you talk of ISIS, which is not necessarily the most legitimate response, they do have a historical right, actually, or privilege, natural privilege, to try to reestablish the caliphate. So anyhow, when you're talking about what's going on in the Middle East, you got to go way beyond, farther back than just the United States and other countries trying to get rid of the leaders of these fake countries. Actually, were fake countries established by the Western money people. So anyhow, that's my position. If you'd like to comment, I'm looking for it. Okay, I'll be back tomorrow on Freya's Day, and we'll pick it up there. All right, 14:05.